Welcome to Moving Forward with Jen Sabin. The 21st century has introduced new norms and resources that are of immense value to businesses and their bottom line. Yet in business, we require relevance and innovation, not just more information. We need the true stories of what works and what does not work. Our program today will tell you what you need to know. The experiences, perspectives, and resources shared by Jen and her guests will make all the difference for you and your business moving forward. Now, here's your host, Jen Sabin.
Hello, hello, and welcome, everyone. It is a pleasure to be here today on Moving Forward. Our topic today is the unintentional entrepreneur. And by the end of our conversation with our guest, some of us will be reevaluating how we've gone about our branding. We'll be revisiting our standards, our reputation, and where we put our time, energy, and attention. You know, there's different types of entrepreneurs, right? There's the person who goes to school and they study entrepreneurship and go that track. And then there are those who are lifestyle entrepreneurs. They're interested in entrepreneurship and creating a business to design a particular lifestyle. We're seeing a lot more of that currently. There are also entrepreneurs who are kind of serial entrepreneurs. What they like to do is create a business, monetize. It's the getting started. It's the having it come into existence, and then moving on to the next. There are purpose-driven entrepreneurs, those entrepreneurs who there is something they want to impact, and that has them create a business and an entity to fulfill on that purpose. And then there's a large group of what we would call entrepreneurs, and most likely they would not necessarily call themselves entrepreneurs, the kind of unintentional entrepreneur. And we see it all the time. There are people that have a particular passion for something, or there's something they enjoy doing, and they begin to build a business around it. It's the designer who loves to design, but it wasn't that they wanted to be in the retail business or the distribution business or import export in terms of fabrics. It's the chef who loves to cook and wants to create that platform, that venue to share his food with people. But it wasn't that he wanted to be, quote unquote, in the restaurant business. And our guest today, we are so fortunate to have Kelly Stenzel. Many of you may recognize the name, and certainly those who are interested or engaged in golf will recognize the name. Kelly is a member of the PGA and the LPGA. And Kelly is a Golf for Women magazine top 50 teacher. She's rated by Golf Digest as one of the top teachers in New York State. And since 2009, in the United States by Golf Magazine, Kelly is ranked in the top 100 teachers in the United States. She's published 3 women's golf books: The Women's Guide to Golf, A Handbook for Beginners, The Women's Guide to Consistent Golf, The Women's Guide to Lower Scores. She's a contributing writer for Golf for Women and WorldGolf.com, and she is such an accomplished golfer in terms of played 4 years of Division I women's collegiate golf, finished her senior year second in the nation in the NCAA. She played professionally for 5 years on several tours all over the world, including the Futures Tour, the European Tour, the Asian Tour, the South African Tour, and the Australian Tour. With over 15 years of teaching experience, she founded and runs the Kelly Stenzel Golf Academy in Palm Beach, Florida. We are so fortunate to have today one of the top golf teachers in the United States. I'll step out on a limb and I'll say in the world, when you start to hear the statistics through the show of how many golf teachers there are to be in the top 50, top 100. Kelly Stenzel. Welcome, Kelly.
Thanks, Jen. I'm glad to be here, and I'm going to hire you for my PR agent after the introduction. I appreciate that.
You're so welcome. Ooh, moonlighting. No, but thank you. And so, Kelly, it's mind-boggling. I enjoy golf. However, I'm not a golfer, right? And when I started to look at what comprised this $60 billion industry, it was staggering. At a very young age, as you know, a young adult out of university, you decided to go pro and to go on tour. There are many men and women who play collegiate sports, right? Are athletes, accomplished, you know, great athletes, and yet they don't necessarily choose to go pro. What prompted that decision?
Well, when I went to college, I went to Furman University in Greenville, South Carolina, and I actually was fortunate to get into a better school than I might have otherwise just because of playing golf. And so when I chose that school, I really chose it for the education because it was such a terrific school. And while I was there, my coach at Furman, Mick Potter, was such a great coach. I actually just got so much better while I was there. And there were quite a few good players that came out of Furman that turned pro and played and did very well. That it honestly was just kind of a natural transition, and it just seemed like it was worth a try. My father also had followed the PGA Tour and played some events after he was out of school, so it just seemed like it was worth a try. You know, I had just improved quite a bit while I was there. So while I had my business education to fall back on, it was just an opportunity that I knew if I didn't do it, I might regret it later.
Mm. Really, really fantastic in terms of, it sounds like you had support from your family, not so much pushback.
Oh, absolutely. You know, that was kind of one of the best things. You know, no matter what I was doing, my father was always fully supportive, you know, no matter where we were going or what we were doing. There was never any question as to that I could do whatever I put my mind to.
Outstanding. Outstanding. And something that, you know, we've mentioned on this program before is when you have something that's a consideration and it's new and in some ways vulnerable, that to make sure you're prudent about who you tell first, you know, and not necessarily tell the people who are rooting for you but are going to ask those very pragmatic questions which could kind of deflate you and have you reconsider, go to them after you've already gotten some positive reinforcement. But it sounds like you got that all in the same place.
I did. I was very lucky, and I still am.
What do they say? Luck is where hard work meets opportunity.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think that's an old quote. The harder I work, the luckier I get.
Yeah. And kind of goes contrary to the shortcut mentality that we see a lot of right now in terms of it does take effort. I'm curious, in terms of the tour though, what were the lessons that you got from that experience that supported what you're doing now?
Well, you know, there were a lot of lessons. There's so many. To me, it was that the work that you put in behind the scenes was what prepared you to perform under the pressure. And playing professional golf when you're playing is a little bit different than teaching because obviously your fundamentals need to be good and your preparation needs to be sound. And, you know, it's just kind of your whole life and taking care of yourself, you know, reflects in your performance. And with playing, you know, it's a little different because you could do all the right things to prepare and you didn't always perform. So that was, if anything, a little bit of the frustration of it. No matter how hard you worked, there was never a guarantee, you know. So, but it's, you know, it's similar to everything in life. You had to do your work behind the scenes to be ready when tournament day rolled around.
You know, it's interesting because in business, when we kind of look at sales and marketing and things of that nature, we can't control the outcomes. We can control the actions. So it really sounds like it was that lesson to there's what you're committed to and there's what you want, and you do everything that you can possibly do, and then you can't control that outcome.
Right.
Yeah, you know, that's a mastery lesson. You know, that's one of those things that certainly is a mastery lesson. Yet, you decided not to tour anymore. So here you are, this young adult, going around the world touring, you know, really to an elite group of golfers, right? Was it specifically women's tours, or was it mixed in those days? Because I know times have changed a little bit.
No, thank God it wasn't mixed.
Okay.
I didn't hit it quite far enough to keep up with the women, let alone if it was mixed. So, no, it was just women, and I played, you know, I played the mini tour in the United States when I first got out of college, and it just wasn't really what I was looking for. So when we traveled overseas, the tournaments were bigger and the the venues were fun and the people were very nice and you were playing in, you know, countries opens, and it was, you know, just really just an experience and a life experience too, you know, learning how to travel and manage yourself and get from country to country. And it was really an amazing experience that I, you know, I might not have had I just stayed in the United States and played.
So here you are kind of managing all of it. And then there's a point at which you decide, okay, I'm done. What's next?
Right. You know, it wasn't that cut and dried. It was, I was slowing down playing. I had really felt like I had given it a good go. You know, I had some successes and some quieter times too. And kind of in the meantime, I started teaching a little bit, even though I probably wasn't 100% prepared to teach. But because I could play, people assumed I could teach, which is not the proper assumption. But I knew enough I could help people. And so while I was still playing for a living, I started teaching a little bit. And I just found it was just such a better fit for me and kind of for my personality. And, you know, I felt like I had given the playing a fair shake, that there were not going to be any regrets. And just kind of the more I got into teaching, the more I realized it just kind of suited me and suited my personality. And I just really found it to be fun, you know, almost all the time, where the playing could be fun when you were playing well, but not so fun when you weren't.
Yeah, understood. Understood. So not so much a kind of that abrupt, decisive decision, like, okay, it's time. It sounds like it was an evolution, and it just, the incongruity of the two in terms of where you were getting energy and what you were enjoying more was pulling you in that direction.
Absolutely. You know, one thing that I say all the time is I believe decisions make themselves. And honestly, this decision just made itself. It was just kind of happening over time and, you know, just continued to grow. And, you know, when I did stop playing and I started teaching full time, it was, you know, with no regret whatsoever, which is nice to be able to say.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's something else there, which I think for so many of us who have our own business and are growing our businesses and accountable for all these things and working all these things, or are solopreneurs or whatever it looks like in terms of the dynamic, there's something that you are pointing to in terms of trusting ourselves and being willing to let go of what maybe we should be doing or what may be perceived in a different light, and notice what really resonates in terms of joy, fulfillment. It feels right. It works.
Oh, I agree with that 100%, because actually when I got out of college, I was working part-time at a golf club. I started working part-time for a money manager. And while I learned a lot and he was very nice, I was just not happy inside. It made me a little crazy. So that was me trying to make sure I used my business education, but it just was not. As soon as I did it for a very short period of time, I realized it just wasn't what I was supposed to be doing. And, you know, I as I get older, the more I trust my inner voice, even though I've been pretty good at listening to it throughout my life.
Yeah, and often we it's that balance between being pragmatic and also trusting, as you said, that inner voice. We're going to go to break, and when we come back, we're going to continue talking with Kelly Stenzel, and we're going to go into now the teaching years and learn more about the unintentional entrepreneur. We're off to break now.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
Hi, I'm Rebecca Costa, host of The Costa Report. Our guest this week is going to give us a rare look into the world of global hackers. The author of We Are Anonymous, Parmi Olson, will be here to tell us how hackers have assaulted Visa, PayPal, Sony Entertainment, even the Vatican. This is one program you don't want to miss. Join Parmi Olson this Tuesday at 6 a.m. and again at 6 p.m. on the Voice America Business Channel.
Tune in for What About Wealth every week to learn the vital answers to your questions about creating wealth, investing it, donating it, and protecting it. Your hosts, are Rich Bloomfield and Rick Durfee, who explain the principles that govern wealth in terms you can understand. Building and preserving positive wealth requires correct action, but few people know how wealth really works. Listen every Tuesday at 7 a.m. Pacific Time, 10 a.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel and find the answers you need about wealth.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
You are listening to Moving Forward with Jen Sabin. We'd love to hear from you today. Please call in to our program at 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. If you prefer, send an email to Jen Sabin at jensabin.com. And remember, that's two N's in Jen. Now, back to Moving Forward.
Hello and welcome back. Today we're talking with Kelly Stenzel. Kelly Stenzel is a Golf for Women top 50 rated teacher and one of the top 100 teachers. That's one of the top 100 golf teachers in the United States by Golf Magazine. Kelly's a member also of the PGA and the LPGA. And when we left, we were discussing with Kelly how after university she went on tour and then she decided to teach. And she recognized that she had this kind of gravitational pull towards teaching. It was more of a fit, as she noticed it was something that she enjoyed more, and so made that change. Kelly, there was also something else that you did, which was to publish three books specifically focused on women and golf. What prompted that decision?
You know, it's kind of funny because, you know, I've ended up a lot of places that I didn't start out trying to get to. And when I wrote the first book, it was strictly for beginners. I mean, it's really just basic, because one of the differences that I found with my teaching versus a lot of other teachers was I just think it's safer to assume that the student doesn't know anything and speak in English instead of golf lingo, because so many people get lost in this technical golf lingo. So I just started writing things down, you know, just kind of what I taught and in a very simple fashion, and just found that I could just sit and kind of write, literally write for hours and hours. And then, so I ended up with these notebooks just full of pages of my writing. And then I kind of sat down by myself and I said, well, if this were going to be a book, what is it missing? So I went back through and kind of added the stuff that I thought was missing. And then kind of went through a very funny process of getting it published, where I was teaching in New York in the Hamptons at that point, and knew quite a few people in New York and in the publishing business. And I called a friend of mine. I said, well, if I had a book and I wanted to have it published, you know, what is the process that's involved? Well, the process that I went through is nothing like what most people go through, where they kind of roundabouted me into meet with a publisher. So it's kind of a funny story where I took my little bag and with my stuff in it and my clothes, and I took the bus into New York City, and I met this gentleman, Donald I. Fine, from Penguin Publishing in this very fancy New York restaurant. I remember changing my clothes in a Burger King to meet with him. You know, and normally all this goes through a literary agent, but I didn't have one, and I just had my little notebook, and here it was typed up, and, you know, he sat there, and he was older, he was probably 75, and had been in the business forever, and here I am at, you know, age probably 29, just finished playing, and he asked me, you know, what's different about what you do, and I explained to him very quickly why it was different, and why I thought women learn differently, and after about 5 minutes, he just looked at me and said, okay, we'll publish it. And I remember just sitting there, just trying to remain calm and not jump up and down like I wanted to. So it was, you know, it was kind of another way where I got there without intending to get there, because I wasn't meaning to write a book. But, you know, it kind of started the process. So it, kind of a, just a different way to get there, but fortunately it got there.
the unintentional entrepreneur. Because, you know, and certainly the publishing industry has changed dramatically from, you know, even 5-10 years ago. This is a fantastic story. You know, and for those of you who are listening and might be thinking it's supposed to happen a particular way, sometimes it really is, as we discussed in last week's show, that you recognize that something's wanted or needed and you move forward on it. And you asked questions and you didn't keep it a monologue. You know, if I were to do this, how would I go about it? And do you know anyone? And the next thing you know, you find yourself sitting in a New York fancy restaurant, and you're going to be published. How exquisite. So were there any surprises from that journey?
Yeah, I think there's surprises in every journey.
That's what makes it a journey, right?
Because that sounded all well and good, but kind of to make a very long story short, that initial excitement kind of had quite a few issues after that, and that they said, okay, we'll publish it, but you don't have a lot of experience, so we'd like you to have a co-author. So they got a co-author for me. And we'd like you to have a literary agent, so they got a literary agent for me. And my co-author had a stroke, and my publisher died. And my co-author, when she added things to the book, because she wasn't healthy, unfortunately, she was sending me recipes instead of helping me to polish my writing. So the whole thing really kind of fell through the floor for a couple years because it really went into a holding pattern, which honestly, Jen, in hindsight was great and probably for a reason, because I was through a friend again, I found a literary agent who I love by the name of Rich Barber, of Barber and Associates, and he helped me to get the rights back, even though it took some time. And I was able to rewrite the book back into my words, because if anybody's read my golf books and taken a lesson from me, you can see I wrote them. They're in my words. They're very simple. I like to believe they're understandable. So even though it went through a very difficult time, I was able to make it really what I wanted it to say in the long run. And the beginner book's done very well. I think because most women think they're beginners for a long time. I mean, I know women that have been playing for 20 years, and they would still consider themselves beginners, even though they're not. So, it was definitely a long, involved process. But, you know, I believe that it kind of ended up where it should have been, just maybe took a little longer.
Outstanding. And why I'm saying outstanding, it's not fun when you're living through that, right? And I've had kind of parallel experiences. When you're in it, it's lousy. It's hard.
It's not supposed to be this way.
Why me? You know, not victim why me, but come on, right?
Right.
And yet, it sounds like the finished product was really your self-expression. It's something that, I mean, you'd be proud anyway, but it was congruent with who you are and what your original intention was for it.
Absolutely. You know, I always say, I hope in hindsight, whatever I'm doing, I can look back and say it was worth it. That's what I used to say, because when you publish a book, it's not for the money. You don't make a lot of money, but I always said, if I can just look back someday and say all this was worth it, I'll be really happy. And then, you know, some of the really nice experiences that I've had are, you know, getting letters or emails from people I don't even know that say, you have really helped me with my golf game. Just the idea that I could help somebody that I never met, I just thought was really great. And I remember after receiving a few of those letters thinking, this was what I hoped for, that I could look back and say, This was worth it. I improved somebody's quality of life or their golf game or whatever, and have not met them personally.
You know, and you can really hear, for those of us listening, I say we can hear how that there's something that is so important to you in terms of what you do and helping others and making a difference and impacting people, specifically in the area of golf, like, you know, their ability to play the sport, to enjoy the sport, And that's such a different road than on tour or playing.
Oh, absolutely. And that's why I think that was a better calling for me, because, you know, not that all touring professionals are tough, but I think there's a degree to which you have to be tough and a little self-centered, and that just isn't and wasn't me. So I think the teaching where I can kind of give and share just matches my personality and makes me a lot happier.
You know, really stellar. Really, really stellar. So there's a piece, though, which, so you have published the books, you wrote the books, and that was happening in tandem to your teaching and positioning yourself as a teacher. And what, so you left the tour, you started teaching. Did you start your own school then, or were you teaching under the umbrella of someone else? How did that all play out?
When I first started teaching, I started teaching at a private club in Jupiter, Florida called Admiral's Cove, which is just a beautiful place with a lot of very nice people. And, you know, I was there for 8 years and really liked it. But I really got to a point where, you know, I wasn't learning a lot anymore. And I realized that the running of the tournaments and the being involved at the day-to-day of the club really wasn't what I wanted to do. I just wanted to focus on teaching. So I made a move to PGA National, under the direction of another top 100 teacher named Mike Adams, who's just a phenomenal teacher. And we had a giant golf school there at PGA National. We had about 25 instructors, and we would do two schools every week with 30 to 40 students. And if I could tell you how well this school was run, it was just unbelievable. Every instructor was just trained so that it just worked. The timing of it worked. The knowledge of the instructors was amazing. We all really worked as a team. And, you know, Mike Adams was a reason for all that. So that's really where I learned to teach. While I was busy when I first started, I really started to learn to teach and understand cause and effect and be a lot more efficient with helping people to be better more quickly while I was there. But I was, you know, along with that, I was always traveling to go see other teachers teach. I would spend a day, I'd call ahead and say, I'd love to come and watch you teach. And most teachers are pretty nice about, sure, come and spend the day. So I worked with Todd Anderson a little bit when he was at Old Marsh, and I would see Bob Toski, and, you know, I would make an effort to go spend a day with another top teacher in the area and just really watch what they did. Because to me, kind of trying to learn from the books wasn't that valuable, but watching the actual lesson and just kind of sitting there for a period of time and being trained at PGA National under Mike Adams, that was really what has helped me to be a lot better teacher and a lot more efficient. And, you know, it's still something that I do all the time. You know, I'm still going to watch other teachers teach and seeing what they're doing, and that's what really made the difference. That's when I feel like I was able to help people get better as quickly as possible.
You know, we're going to take a break in a moment, and it's so interesting because school's never out for the pro, and that's been consistent amongst every person that we've interviewed on this show who enjoys stellar success, is that school's never out for the pro. They're always interested and curious, that there's an absence of hubris, of those three most dangerous words in the U.S. in our vocabulary. I know that. So we're not open to learning or listening anymore. When we come back, we're going to continue to talk with Kelly Stenzel. And in the interim, we're going to take a break right now.
From the boardroom to you, Voice America Business Network.
Do you, like most Americans, spend the majority of your life at work? Are you making it the joy that it deserves to be, or are you feeling drained and unfocused? Tune in to A Great Place to Work with hosts Kurt Kaufman and Dr. Kathy Sorensen. Your hosts have more than 30 years of experience in workplace consulting and are ready to bring you the secrets and success stories of businesses who are making their business a great place to work. Listen every Friday at 11 a.m. Pacific Time, 2 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel and enjoy a better workplace and a better life. Are you a business innovator, or are you just sitting on the sidelines? Tune in every week for Coffee Break with Game Changers, presented by SAP. Host Bonnie D. Graham talks to a cross-section of the movers and shakers who are leading by example. They will share best practices and innovative ideas to keep you thinking and moving along with the best. Join us for Coffee Break with Game Changers, presented by SAP, Wednesday mornings at 11 a.m. Eastern Time, 8 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Business Channel. What does a visual workplace mean to you? How does it contribute to operational excellence? And what steps do you take to put it powerfully in place? Listen to The Visual Workplace, Work That Makes Sense, to find out. Each week, Dr. Gwendolyn Galsworth, visual workplace expert and award-winning author, shares tools and strategies to help you make the workplace speak at a glance without saying a word. Learn to work safer, faster, better, and at far less cost, no matter what business you're in. Tune in to The Visual Workplace every Tuesday at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern on Voice America Business.
Voice America Business Network, the bottom line in business.
You are listening to Moving Forward with Jen Sabin. We'd love to hear from you today. Please call in to our program at 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. If you'd prefer, send an email to Jen Sabin at jensabin.com. And remember, that's two N's in Jen. Now, back to Moving Forward.
Hello and welcome back, everyone. Today we're just talking about the unintentional entrepreneur, and we're speaking with Kelly Stenzel, founder of the Kelly Stenzel Golf Academy. And Kelly, if you're just tuning in, is one of the top 100 teachers since 2009, ranked by U.S. Golf Magazine and by Golf for Women Magazine, one of the top 50 teachers. Just to put this in perspective, in the United States alone, as of 2011, according to the National Golf Foundation, there are over 50,000 golf instructors in the United States, an estimated 50,000. And Kelly is ranked in the top 100 by Golf Magazine and the top 50 by Golf for Women Magazine. So we are so fortunate to have truly a leader and one of the best of the best. And prior to the break, Kelly was talking a bit about how while she was teaching, she was also going out and learning and listening to others that were peers and colleagues and masters at teaching golf. Now, what I'm hearing, Kelly, that's kind of a theme behind all this is that you could go anywhere geographically, and yet you tended throughout your career to stay in the same geographic locations in Palm Beach County, Florida, and you could be more specific about that, and also in New York State as well. What had you make the decision to be geographically in these two locations?
It's funny. I'm kind of laughing at you saying that. I grew up in upstate New York, in Geneva, and it was cold. Like, I couldn't wait to leave. So I went to college in South Carolina, which I loved, but that still wasn't warm enough. So after I graduated from college, a friend of mine's parents had a condominium down here in Palm Beach Gardens, just off of PGA Boulevard. So I moved here with her while I was playing professional golf, and I just loved it. I just fell in love with Palm Beach Gardens and Florida, and I just felt like this was where I was supposed to be from. I just wasn't born here. And that was a long time ago, and I still live about 5 miles from where I originally moved. So I just love the area. I like the sunshine. I like being outside. And there's just so much golf down here. So it was, as I started to teach, between being really happy here personally and just loving the lifestyle, there's just so many great golf courses and clubs and people who are anxious to get better. So while I've thought that maybe there are other places in the world that I might like to go, you know, I might like to summer in Colorado, that might be fun. Just the transition to Florida was just a very kind of easy, natural one for me. And it was funny, as I moved here and I swore I'd never move back to New York, because it was just too cold, this amazing job opportunity came up in the Hamptons at Atlantic Golf Club. And I said to myself, well, you know, it's worth a try, and if I don't like it, it's only 4 months, so, you know, what's the big risk? So after 17 summers teaching there later, I think it just kind of worked well with loving the area and something fun to do in the summer that got me out of the Florida heat, and just also another really beautiful place in the country where people are very, very anxious to improve their golf. So it just kind of worked between the wonderful areas and the nice people who are very anxious to learn.
You know, it fascinates me in terms of at the beginning when I was discussing the kind of the different kind of mindsets in entrepreneurs that, you know, it's not coming from, well, what are the two primary locations where there's the most people playing golf? You know, that kind of strategic, let me sort this out and design this in terms of maximizing potential students and clients. It really comes from, what do I enjoy? Where do I want to be? Where are there people that I can make a difference for? Completely different dynamic than that kind of serial entrepreneur who's looking to monetize.
Yeah, I believe that, you know, you do what makes you happy, and that side of the business usually works out.
I'm smiling because, you know, it is, there are so many skills that you have, and Kelly's like, that I have, and I'm putting this out there, it might be stepping over the borders of something, but what it takes in terms of discipline and focus and being responsible to have a mastery of a sport becomes so woven into the tapestry of how you handle things. Like, there's this level of being accountable for what you do and what you don't do and how you handle yourself that for many people isn't something that they've cultivated. So when you say in this kind of nonchalant way, if you do what you love, the rest will follow, there is also this kind of background when you look at how you've handled everything from wanting to learn from the best and give people the best possible experience. There's and the business education. There are all these other pieces that really support it also being successful as a business enterprise.
Yeah, I think a lot of what it takes to play, like, you know, I've been playing since I was 3. You know, I started playing a lot at age 10, and I started competing a lot at age 15, 16, maybe even a little younger than that, maybe 13. You know, that work ethic that it takes to play, I think, is just very similar to what it takes to, you know, be successful at anything, you know, and I learned that from my father. My father owned a car dealership, and he was just a great worker, so he instilled upon my brother and I that, you know, that's just kind of what the right thing to do is, and that's, you know, that's just, you know, the apple not falling far from the tree.
Yeah, and it sounds like, and everyone's discussed kind of mentors and people that they've looked to emulate in certain ways, and it sounds like you were really brought up with some very positive messages and role models.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, and a lot of the teachers that I've worked with, you know, I've been lucky. There's some luck in that, you know, the people that I've gone to work with and work for have just been, you know, just so smart and so helpful to me that, you know, to me, it never gets done by yourself. There are people that help you along the way. So I get a little bit lucky with being around some amazing people.
Mm. And again, from what you've said, you know, I've been lucky to be around them, and you've sought them out, and you made the effort, and it wasn't just like a waiting game.
Well, that's right. They didn't call me.
Yeah.
They were waiting for me, that's for sure.
And it's just so important for our listeners also to look at and consider, where might you be in a waiting game? Where is there someone that's really close by? And as our guest last week, Matt Johnson from SupLove, was talking about mentors, that typically if you reach out and ask, you may be surprised at how receptive and open people are to a conversation that could be really beneficial to a small to mid-sized business in terms of where you are and where you want to be. So let's go into the Kelly Stenzel Golf Academy years. What was behind the making that decision to kind of put your stake in the sand that way? You know, you were at PGA, perhaps some other places, and then there was the decision to open your own golf academy.
You know, one of the things that I've always really liked doing is golf schools and big clinics. So kind of throughout my teaching, whether it's been at private clubs or traveling to different clubs, I love doing big groups with plenty of instructors, so everybody gets lots of attention. And that was actually one of the big advantages of coming through PGA National, because these golf schools were so huge. We would have 40 students, and we would have 16 to 18 instructors with these students, so they got plenty of attention. So I had seen it done well, and I had seen it done to actually a very grand scale, where it just ran literally. Everything ran. The instructors knew exactly what to do. So I had this wonderful model to go from. And, you know, I liked that. I liked the having to really keep an eye on the big picture. And I liked having a lot of students, and I liked the buzz. So we started doing some ladies' golf schools at PGA National while I was there, myself and another instructor, Shaney Ross. And we took those to Breakers and did those for a little while. And I taught at Breakers for a little while, and when I was looking to have a place where I could, you know, really be in charge and kind of run with some of my own programs, you know, I moved down the street to Palm Beach Par 3 in South Palm Beach, which is this great little public Par 3 golf course. It's right on the ocean and right in the intercoastal, and it's just this amazing little place with the best range in Palm Beach and, you know, 18 really nice holes, where it gave me the freedom to do my programs and do, you know, what I wanted to do. And when I say that, the nice thing was that most of the instructors that I worked with at PGA National and kind of other places as well, I bring them in. They come and teach with me. So just the creative side of it was fun because, you know, I give a lot of private lessons, and that's what most of my time is involved doing. But the golf schools, you know, allow me the creativity to try different things. So I have my golf school at Palm Beach Par 3 now, and we run a lot of daily clinics and full-day golf schools. And we do a design-your-own golf school where people can bring their groups in and kind of give me an idea of what they'd like to do, and we really can develop a program around whatever they'd like to do. And that's what's fun, that creative side versus just the private lesson, you know, one after another. And I'm able to match what you're looking to do with the instructors that I think will work best for you. And you know, sometimes that's me, and maybe sometimes that's not me. So, you know, I have four other instructors there right now, and you know, it's a facility that's getting better and better, and we're kind of looking forward to, you know, trying new programs and see what works and see what doesn't work, and then go from there. So it was just really a way for me to be able to be creative and have my ideas instead of having to follow somebody else's.
We're going to go to a break now, and when we come back, we're going to hear more about the Kelly Stenzel Golf Academy and also the business of being in the business of golf in this $60 billion industry, and also a couple of interesting tidbits in terms of how golf can make a difference for us, for those of us who are in business. So off to break now. When we come back, we'll be continuing to talk with Kelly Stenzel.
Business community's first choice in Internet Talk Radio, Voice America Business Network.
Are you looking for innovative ideas on how to achieve your financial dreams? Tune in to Empirical Investing Radio every Thursday afternoon at 2 Pacific, 5 Eastern on the Voice America Business Channel. Join certified financial planners Ken Smith and Ethan Broga to learn how you can obtain financial success. You'll be entertained while you discover techniques to alleviate your financial concerns. Empirical Investing Radio every Thursday at 2 Pacific, 5 Eastern on the Voice America Business Channel. Leadership is a vital skill set in today's competitive global economy. Being a leader is not enough. To succeed, you must optimize your performance and know how to imbue others in your organization with leadership skills. Practical, actionable leadership insights are the focus of Leadership Development News, hosted each Monday at 9 a.m. Pacific, noon Eastern, by Kathy Greenberg and Relly Nadler on the Voice America Business Channel. Drs. Greenberg and Nadler, who coach global leaders on how to be most effective, will share their insights and contacts. The path to leadership excellence begins here.
Is your business model robust enough? In today's ever-changing business environment, people are working to transform themselves, their futures, and their business. Tune in to Business Reinvention with your host, Nancy Lynn. To stay ahead of the game in business, you have to constantly reinvent yourself and your organization. With Nancy's experience and that of her guest experts, you'll learn from stories of inspiration, innovation, and forward thinking. Listen for Business Reinvention live every Monday at 4 p.m. Pacific Time, 7 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
You are listening to Moving Forward with Jen Sabin. We'd love to hear from you today. Please call in to our program at 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. If you'd prefer, send an email to Jen Sabin at jensabin.com. And remember, that's two N's in Jen. Now, back to Moving Forward.
Hello and welcome back to Moving Forward. This is Jen Sabin, and we are speaking with Kelly Stenzel. Kelly Stenzel is, if you're not familiar with the name, you will be after today, is one of the top 100 golf teachers, one of the top 100 teachers in the United States of America, ranked by Golf Magazine. And just be aware that there's over 50,000 golf instructors in the United States of America, as estimated by the National Golf Foundation in 2011. And she's also ranked as one of the top 50 teachers of Golf for Women magazine. And Kelly is also the founder and owner of the Kelly Stenzel Golf Academy. And we were just talking about how she transitioned from PGA National, teaching there, to the Breakers in Palm Beach, top-notch Class AA Plus resort, to establishing the Kelly Stenzel Golf Academy in the town of Palm Beach at a golf course in Palm Beach, South Palm Beach, Florida. And Kelly, what I'm curious about was, so definitely that venue to do the work that you want to do and create the programs from individual to the group programs. What about the business side of this surprised you?
You know, it's interesting with all the changes that the governments are going through and all the, you know, specific laws that have changed over time. You know, it's very specific as to who can do what and the process for starting this business and going through the RFP and the bid process. So when the opportunity came up because of the changes in the laws, here was this whole RFP process. I didn't even know what RFP meant.
And for those of you who don't, request for proposal, for those of you who are listening, request for proposal is the RFP process.
Right. I had no idea. So it was, I had no idea how much work it was. I mean, I had to get other proposals just to have some idea of what they were involving. And they're very specific and they're just, I mean, I called it my senior thesis, because for me to put in this proposal, it was 132 pages for something that I was basically already doing, but it was going to make it more formal, where now I was responsible for the insurances and the contracts and really the whole kind of business side of it, which I didn't really know anything about. So there's a certain degree where I kind of look back and laugh and say, well, there's something to be said about just teaching, because it is a lot of work. But kind of once again, it was one of those things I said, well, I hope when I'm through it, I'll say it was worth it. You know, and with the tough economy when I went through the process and, after kind of a long involved, time of going through the interviews and the point system and all, always in the back of my mind was, if I don't do this and I don't get this, the people that work there may lose their jobs. So while it was going to be an opportunity for me, there was a certain degree of pressure that I put on myself that these are people that I worked with, these are people that I cared for, they weren't in a situation where they wanted to step up and do all this work, and if I didn't do it, I didn't know who would. So, you know, I reached out to a woman, Donna White, who had done some similar stuff, and she was very helpful. So I really kind of reached out to other people saying, help me. You know, I don't know what I'm doing. And some were helpful and some weren't. But, you know, it's it gets easier with time. But the initial process of understanding what insurances I needed and hiring a lawyer to look over the contracts was all brand new to me. And frustrating at times because I didn't know much. But now I do. So, you know, if I can help another golf professional go through this, I'd be more than happy to. It is a process.
Mm. You know, and just to put some context around it, so the Golf Academy took over the concession for one of the public golf courses.
Yes.
Okay, so that's why the government was involved. It's not that if you're looking to start a golf academy that you've got to, you know, that everyone has to go through that process.
No,
but this is,
thankfully,
it sounds like a gem of a golf course, and it worked, and it was perfect. And this way, you weren't even doing that kind of build out. You didn't have to build out the, you know, you weren't, you were taking something that already had a certain degree of infrastructure.
We were, but there was a lot that needed to be done. So, you know, I'm in a process now where with the money that I make, I'm really just trying to make it better and get it to a place where, you know, it can be, you know, better and better every year. So we put some money into a rain shelter, which is nice down here when it's hot too, you know, and just kind of making it the way I'd like it to be. So, you know, that's there wasn't infrastructure there, but it's one that needed some work as well.
You know, it's for anyone, I mean, that's looking to contract with the U.S. government. It isn't, there's an incredible and incredibly long process, and they've streamlined it, and computers have made a big difference. In the 90s, I had my company get involved in the procurement process in terms of doing some government work, and it was insanely frustrating in terms of the decentralization of it and the floppy disks and the cartons of papers and there, you know, we didn't have computers the way we have them today. But I just want all listeners to know that there are a couple of resources. The SBDC, the Small Business Development Centers, also have a section of it where there are people who are specifically there. Their whole purpose and their job is to help people navigate the procurement process through the contracting, et cetera. And it's no cost. And it's a wonderful, wonderful resource for anyone who's going through this. That, and as you could hear from Kelly, the challenges of it. So here we have this incredible journey. And what's so rich and rewarding about the guests on this show is we're not hearing everything tied up in this neat little package and a little bow. That at every juncture, there was decisions, hard decisions that were being made and are still being made. And that there's this piece where it's still evolving. It's not done. Constant upgrading, constant looking at standards and how to improve the product or service. Kelly, I'm just curious. If you could give a gift to someone starting out in your industry, what would it be?
It would be the opportunity to go and watch people that do it well early on in their careers. Just go and sit back and listen and watch. Watch it done well and realize that the elite teachers, at least in my area, are more than happy to have you and to help you. It's a very giving area because we all learn from somebody. So I think that be with the best person that you can get to as early as possible would be my advice.
Fantastic. What a gem. And thank you so much for joining us today, Kelly. It's been very enriching and very illuminating. For those who are listening and you want to get in touch with Kelly, you can go to her website at Kelly Stenzel. That's K-E-L-L-I-E-S-T-N-Z-E-L golf.com. K-E-L-L-I as in ice cream, E as in Edward, S as in Sam, T as in Thomas, E as in Edward, N as in Nancy, Z as in zebra, E as in Edward, L, Kelly Stenzel Golf. com. And you could also find her on Facebook and Twitter under KellyStenzelGolf.com. Thank you for joining in today and listening, and make this week a moving forward week. Take care now.
Thank you again for tuning in to Moving Forward. Please join Jen Saban again next Wednesday at 10 a.m. Pacific Time, 1 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel. Make your week a moving forward week.